Hello and welcome to another show of At Random. My name is Rick Timmis.
I'm Jackson Matthews.
I'm John Wordsworth.
And I'm Gordon Henderson.
So today, I want to welcome Gordon to our show. He's a guest on our show today. Gordon, thank you for taking the time to come and have a chat with us today.
He's actually been here the whole time, but you just never hear him. He's very quiet. He's been here for all the other shows.
I'm the guy that falls down the stairs in the corner, you know. The fourth man.
Now, Gordon's been working on a development of BASIC and reintroducing BASIC, and what we wanted to talk about today was to get a little bit of a handle on that project. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing with BASIC and what inspired you to do that, Gordon?
Inspiration. In November, which was about 5 months ago, I was tidying up my office and I came across some documents that were produced by what was then the Scottish Micro Education Development Department, basically a group in Scotland that were responsible for computers in schools, circa 1980. And I'd written a programme whilst I was at school, which was boring by today's standards, but it was teaching transformation geometry to kids. And this programme went round Apple IIs throughout the whole of Lothian region and maybe further afield, I really don't know. Anyway, I found the notes, teacher's notes, plus a programme listing, which had been printed out, and I thought, wouldn't it be a good idea to run this programme again? So a sensible person would probably find an Apple II emulator online, run it, and maybe try and find an electronic copy of the programme. Me, being a little bit unsensible, decided that I would write my own BASIC interpreter and type it in just so I could see the programme running again 32 years after I wrote it. And that's what I did, although I haven't gotten around to typing the programme in yet, which is a little bit disappointing for myself. But there you go.
So in your interpreter that you've written then, have you got enough commands developed to be able to run your programme now, or are you still not there yet?
Oh, the interpreter is there. It is as complete as a complete could be. It is a modern BASIC, as I like to think about it. You can program it without line numbers or with line numbers. You don't need to use the go-to instruction or the go-sub instruction because we've got names now. You can have associative arrays, which I think in BASIC is a little bit bizarre. But somebody asked me for associative arrays, and so I put associative arrays in. The graphics side was initially I thought would be the hardest. It turned out to be quite easy once I'd found a good graphics library that I could use. If I could be bothered to type in 3,000 lines of my old BASIC program, it would run more or less straight away without changes.
So, obviously, that's quite a bold thing to do. I would have gone with the Apple IIe emulator.
It's a labour of love, though, isn't it?
I mean,
you admit yourself this completely. It's based off nostalgia, isn't it? I mean, you didn't have to do this, but you thought, I'd love to do this. You know what
absolutely.
I mean,
every year I set myself a personal project, something for myself to do between Christmas and New Year, because I find it quite a difficult time of year to handle. So every year I set myself a little project. And this year I thought, when I was thinking in November, I thought, actually, how hard can it be to write a BASIC interpreter using modern programming techniques? It's written in C. It's not written in the assembly language that the BASICs of the late 70s and early 80s were written in. So I've used modern programming techniques. I've not used the memory management that you might use in a microprocessor-based BASIC. I'm using the standard system calls to give myself memory, to free memory up. And it turned out to be a little bit harder than I thought, but we got there in the end.
A little bit longer than Christmas to New Year's.
Well, the bulk of it was done by the end of January. By the end of January, I was writing and running my own BASIC programs and thinking, wow, this is good. So from the end of January to now, we're middle of April, it's been tweaking it, tidying. I mean, there was a few bugs and a few little gotchas. My weaknesses in C programming is writing a parser, a tokenizer. So although the tokenizer worked, it only worked because I knew how to not make syntax errors. As soon as you started introducing syntax errors, things started to go a little bit wrong. So it's taken me a wee while to iron the bugs out of that. But yeah, we're there now, yeah.
Oh, excellent. I mean, you were saying something about the associative arrays and the other things that made it distinguished it from like the original BASIC. Because I take it it's not just like the original BASIC with like fewer. You've like updated it quite a bit. Because my understanding of all this is all a bit limited, but all that associative array stuff, you couldn't do that before. I take it.
No, you couldn't. I mean, basically by the associative arrays, instead of using a number to index into an array, you can use a string.
Mm.
So if you took a one-dimensional array and had the elements, if you were storing, say, let's say an address book, you store name, address, phone number. Normally you would say, well, name equals 1, address equals 2, phone number equals 3, and you'd go array brackets 1 equals name, array brackets 2 equals, and so on. Well, instead of having 1, 2, 3, you can actually put name, address, phone number, as long as they're strings. Strings in BASIC are delimited by double quotes. And those strings are then interpreted internally into a number, and they're indexed into the array, and it just works.
Yeah, which is not words you hear very often.
No. And you can take that one stage further, because the arrays can be multi-dimensional. So what you then have is, if you have an array where the first index is a number and the second index is indexed by a string, you've almost got a record structure, a little bit like structures in C or any other programming language. The inspiration for associative arrays came because somebody said, how hard would it be to connect it up to SQLite, which is a light version of an SQL database system. And I thought, well, if we had associative arrays, we could then start to use those to represent records inside the database. And I've not done the SQLite part yet, but I've done the associative array part.
So this, so it can actually talk to like contemporary languages as well. People could use it in like their own systems, like outside of like that program you were talking about. Like people could use it for like other like contemporary uses if they wanted to.
Well, interestingly, I have started to use it to write little system scripts in and little routines in.
Okay, yeah.
A very quick modification, and I can put what's known as a shebang first line, so hash exclamation mark, give it the program name, and then the rest of the file is the BASIC. And it's just like running a PHP file, a Python file, or a Perl file.
Sure.
So I'm using it as a general purpose scripting language. I have done a very quick lash-up of using it as a web server CGI backend, which is quite interesting. It's more of an academic exercise, but it's actually faster than PHP. So, there may be some merit there. I don't know. If you want to do basic backend to websites, there's a possibility.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not all necessarily a like a jokey, oh, yeah, I had lots of time in my hands, so I did this. This is something you could actually see as being more efficient than some other solutions, I suppose.
Slightly. I mean, it's still an interpreted language. So from that point of view, if you really want absolute speed and you're doing, say, numerical calculations, you're still better off with C or Fortran or a traditional language like that. But it's not that slow. A quick benchmark tells me that it's between 150 and 200 times slower than compiled C.
Sure.
But it's twice as fast as PHP, so everything's relative.
Yeah, for sure.
It's all relative.
So just to put up a bit of a picture, can I run it? I remember the joy of BASIC was right back in the day. I turned on my Commodore 64. It wasn't a joy then, because that was the only thing it did. But blue screen, flashing cursor. Can you run it in kind of that old-fashioned live mode, as it were, as well as pushing scripts out?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the other things that maybe we can talk about briefly is that since Christmas time, somebody pointed me in the direction of this new Raspberry Pi project, and I didn't pay too much attention to it initially, but I'm now thinking, actually, the whole point of the Raspberry Pi is to get people back into education, is to get computers back into education. And although it wasn't anywhere near my early thoughts, I'm now thinking, and this is where the title Return to Basic came from, let's return to basic, get people back in. I discovered relatively recently that computer programming is not taught mainstream in schools anymore, and I was quite disappointed to find that. So people want to teach Python, they want to teach PHP, C, C#, various other systems in schools, and I'm thinking the entry level to that is probably quite high. You sit a newbie down in front of a computer, you boot Windows or Linux or whatever, and it just takes time. Then they've got to learn the editor, then they've got to learn the IDE, then they've got to learn how to compile a program, then they've got to learn how to debug a program. You switch a computer on, you run BASIC, you're faced with, you've got that whole screen, you can run it the whole screen, you've got that flashing cursor that says ready. You can type in 10 print my name is Gordon Henderson, 20, go to 10. Wow.
That's what I'm talking about. That's proper hardcore programming.
But if you get young people hooked on that, it's instant. You don't have to learn an editor. You don't have to, you know, you have to learn a few things. That what got me into computing was a computer. It was an old HP mini computer, around about 1978. Shows how old I am. Came to the school and it beat me. It ran a program called 23 Matches. You and the computer take turns to remove one, two, or three matches. The person who takes the last match wins. And it beat me. And it beat me again. And then the teacher said, "Why don't you think about one, two, three? What have you got to do?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's interesting. Oh, yes. If I go first and I leave it, I won't spoil the fun for you because you can work it out for yourself. But you know, if I leave it so many matches, then I'm going to win every time. And I beat the computer." And then the teacher showed me the program, and I thought, "Well, that looks easy." And that was it. I was hooked. I could straight away had me type in a program to print my name on the printer, which was connected to it. And I thought, "That's great. That's the wow factor." I think you need to get new people into programming. You need some sort of wow, something that's very quickly going to make them think, "Well, I like programming. I want to do that," or think, "Well, that's good, but it's not for me." Which means you're not going to waste too much time on young people thinking, "Well, we've got to beat programming into them for the next 2 years and it's going to be dreary and dreadful." Well, why not teach them something that they are interested in, like cookery?
I so completely agree with that. I mean, your experience there, it just so reminded me of my first computer studies lessons at school. I knew nothing about computers. And computer studies was on the venue, and I thought I'd be interested in going to see that only because they had a Commodore PET, and I thought that looks like an interesting gadget. I want to know more about it. And somebody did exactly that, showed me how to do 10 print hello Rick, 10 go to 10, and all filled the screen with my name. And that was me. That was me taken there and then. I all of a sudden, you mean within a few minutes, I can type a few things in, and this machine does what I tell it. I'm hooked.
The that's ego me. Trip of seeing your own name exactly. on that screen over yeah. and over. That's all it took.
It is, yeah.
The wall of Rick.
And I think that, I think you're absolutely right with this, the whole easy access. You know, my first computer was a Dragon 32 and it did exactly that. Ready, there's a command line, what do you want it to do? And you go and type and, you know, you type stuff in and away you go. Or you get little magazines with bits of code in them and you want to maybe make this little game or something, so you type that in. And then it doesn't work, so then you start to debug it. And so there's this progression. Rather than, at the moment at school, like you said, the barrier is high to learn this stuff. You've got to come in at a high level, and I think that comes with another problem as well. But the access is nice and easy. Also, the other point about it is that you get much closer to the bare metal of the machine. Not quite true with BASIC, but much closer than you do perhaps using an IDE or using something like Scratch or something like that. You're a long way abstracted. And the problem I've found with all the engineers that I've worked with and guys, younger guys that have come to work with me, they don't know the basics. They don't know what registers are. They don't know what the bus is doing. They don't know how data gets out of memory, onto disk, backwards and forwards, how the CPU operates. They have no concept of those things. When you're trying to work something out from an engineering point of view, if you're blinded at that level, you can't work at a higher level. That's my take on it.
Absolutely. It's getting people interested. And I believe that once people are interested, then they will learn the new things. For myself, I programmed in BASIC on a few different systems. The school got an Apple II. I then think, you know, occasionally something would crash and you'd be left with a screen of hex numbers. And you think, what does that mean? And very quickly, I think, oh, it's assembly language. What's that? Wow, you know, get into assembly language. And carried on. I think if you're keen, you will progress. BASIC is seen as an old-fashioned language. People say, oh, you've got to use GoTo. It generates spaghetti code. I think that if you're taught properly, if you've got a teacher who's keen, and I think I was fortunate enough that I did have a teacher who was keen, you don't have to write spaghetti code. You don't have to use GoTo. You don't need to use subroutines that have got numbers. These days, you can renumber your program. You can write without line numbers. It's not difficult.
No, not with a bit of. I mean, obviously, they got to know about GoTo, but that doesn't mean they have to use it. I mean, it's the same with like things in any programming language. You can either do it like the quick and dirty way, which you learn to do at first. Okay, this does this, but no, here is a better way of doing it. And this all comes in. The point is that you're not putting anybody off that would be interested at that early stage, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I've actually written a teaching manual to go with this, because you do.
Yeah.
and it does introduce GoTo and GoSub, but then the next chapter it said, let's show you how to not use GoTo and not use GoSub.
Exactly.
So we can have procedures with names, and you can call the procedure, or you can call the function with a name. You can then look at different looping constructs. So I decided that there'd be one looping construct in my basic, and it would be the cycle. So you say cycle, and then you do some instructions, and then say repeat.
Yeah.
So the old-fashioned 10 print Gordon 20 go to 10 becomes a three-line program, because it becomes 10 cycle, 20 print hello Gordon, 30 repeat.
Right.
And that's then the basic loop. So we then think we can modify those loops. We can say 10 cycle, 20 print Gordon, 30 repeat until keep rest.
Yeah, yeah.
And so on. So we can then introduce until, and we can also use the while. So we can say repeat until, or we can say repeat while.
Sure.
Or we can say repeat something cycle, or we can say while something cycle. So we can put repeat a while at the top of the bottom of the loop.
Yeah.
Why not? I don't see why languages should restrict you and what you can do. The one that looks a little bit funny is the for loop. And, you know, old-fashioned basic programmers will go, for I equals 1 to 10,
yeah,
blah, 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 next I. Well, my basic, for I equals 1 to 10, cycle.
Yeah.
Statement, 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 repeat. So yeah. So now you have the for modifying the cycle repeat loop. So it all looks sort of the same. I think you can progress your way through it. You can learn simple loops. You can learn about variables. You can learn counters. You know, if I equals 10, then go to 20. Or you can say, you know, repeat until, or you can say for, and so on.
Is the manual like quite a chunky undertaking, or is it?
The manual's an interesting labour of love. I decided to write it as a teaching manual. So the first chapter introduces you to computers in a very simplistic way. The second chapter that begins to introduce you to BASIC. BASIC has got two modes. There's the immediate mode where you can type in print hello Gordon and it prints hello Gordon, or you can type in a program prefixed by a line number 10, print hello Gordon, run, 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 and so on. And you know, and the manual introduces each stage one after the other. I've had a few people review the manual and say it's okay, but so the first half, it needs a little bit of work on it. We'll get there eventually. The second half is more a reference manual, so people who are quite experienced can then think and just say, "Oh, how does the for loop work?" And they can just read the section of the for loop and they can work out how it works. And some of the more esoteric commands, possibly how procedures and functions work, how recursion works, some examples on recursion, local variables, and so on and so forth.
Sure.
So what about, so just taking that a little bit deeper now and thinking about obviously the changes over time from what we had hardware and device availability to modern day devices and the modern day hardware that we've got on our machines. How does your BASIC cope with things like USB memory sticks and hard drives and file systems and things like that?
It would be easy to say it doesn't. However, it does.
That's what we wanted to hear.
It copes with files because file is a file. Now, under Linux, which it was developed, if you've got a mounted file system, it can see it. There are instructions. Originally, there was just open file. I've had to subsequently modify that. So there are three open instructions. There's open in, open a file for input, open out, open a file for output, or open up, open a file for updating. The reason for that is that I was reading a read-only file which was owned by the root user, which happened to be user share dict words. I was reading the system spelling checker list. And if you try and open that in update mode, it fails. So I had to go back and say, I've got three open. So you open it for reading, and you can then read in the 100,000 words that it contains. So it's reasonably straightforward. The way that BASIC handles files is slightly different from the way that C handles files, or rather the perceived way that it handles files. And detecting end of file. If you're writing a C program, you detect end of file after you've read the end of file. If you're writing a BASIC program, you actually want to know if you've read the last record in that file that you know at the end of the file. So there's a few little changes here, but it's reasonably sensible. You can go open file, you can say while not, enter file, file, read line from file, store line in array, repeat. You can do that in BASIC. So general file handling is good. Random access files are there. You can open files. You can seek through files, so you can give yourself fixed length records. It's fairly... I don't think it's a programming technique that may be taught anymore, classic random access files, because everybody nowadays probably just jumps into using SQL databases of some sort. I think maybe this is a programming technique that's been forgotten about. But it's there, you can do it. USB devices, it's a little bit harder because different devices do different things, but the one thing I did put into it was serial port handling. You can open a serial port, you can read characters from a serial port, you can write characters to a serial port. And I did that because I like to play with Arduinos, which are little 8-bit microcontrollers.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've done as part of my, again, a personal project, is I've extended the Arduino wiring system into my BASIC.
Okay, yeah.
So there's actually a BASIC instruction which mimics the Arduino wiring. For example, there's pin mode.
Right.
And if you write a program on Arduino and C, you'd say pin mode 7 output. In BASIC, you can go pin mode 7 output.
Oh, right.
And it transmits a command over the serial bus to the Arduino that says pin mode 7 output. You can then say digit write pin 7 1, and it switches on pin 7.
Right.
So I wrote the serial package purely so I could then drive Arduinos.
That's really awesome, because one of the things I used to do way back in the day when I had a Spectrum was I had loads of wires coming out the back of it with different NAND gates and memory, and I used to page memory in and switch LEDs on and things like that. And of course, you have to do all of that at assembler. So you're saying in your BASIC system, you've got these extensions of commands that allow you to basically pass the correct data packets across the bus to the Arduino and make activities happen.
Yes.
That makes programming the Arduino from your BASIC much, much simpler, am I right?
Absolutely. You need to load one program into Arduino, which is the other half of the little remote control, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
There's a program, it's on my website, you can download it and flash it into your Arduino, and then you can connect it up. Part of the reasoning behind that, again, this came from a little bit from the Raspberry Pi. The Raspberry Pi has got onboard general purpose I.O. So my idea being, and I haven't implemented it yet because I don't have a Raspberry Pi yet.
Join the queue.
It's that, well, I may have one, actually. I've got a... Anyway. One idea is that the command that opens the remote device, so you say DRC open, DRC being Drogon Remote Control, because I can't think of good, decent names for things. If you say DRB open and then you go GPIO, then... If this is running on a Raspberry Pi, the idea is that it opens up your local GPIO device. You can then go pin 1 output, pin 2 input, set pin 1 to high. And you've got the same commands, which then run local on your Raspberry Pi, as is running on your Linux machine talking over a USB serial port or a real serial port to an Arduino, for example. So I was trying to keep things similar over different platforms, with internal to the BASIC doing the necessary conversion thing. I've opened the GPIO, I've got to talk to the local device. Oh, I've opened the serial port. I've got to send a command down the serial port. And you can open to it once if you want.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's got to be a cool incentive also for kids, because that is a hook. This is what you could be making if you persevere with this course for a few months.
Absolutely.
A little Arduino gadget, and you can turn the lights on and off and make them flash and things.
Absolutely.
But that extends itself then into... I mean, I've always had a... And one of these days when I get less busy, I'm going to definitely do this. I've always had this dream of building a robot. The robot I was into as a kid was Maplin sold this robot called the Hero 1.
I remember.
Way back in the day. And I so wanted one of those kids. And I still, even today, have this mad desire with my kids as they grow older. I look at Rhiannon, who's got a bit of an engineering background, mine. She's that type of person. And look at her and I just think, wouldn't it be awesome to have the time to just build a robot with her? Well, I mean, the stuff that you're doing there with the Arduino lends itself beautifully to that, because you can control use the Arduino to drive stepper motors and things like that.
Absolutely. And again, going back to when I was younger, my family background is engineering. They were mechanical engineers. My granddad, his hobby was building steam engines, model steam engines. So I have a mechanical engineering background. After I went to university, I then spent 5 further years in the same university in the mechanical and industrial engineering department. And I was programming robots and designing robots and building factory automation systems. So my background really is control, is robotics, real-time control applications. It wasn't until sort of 5-6 years after that I got I moved to a company just outside Bristol, and the rest of the state's history. But we don't know what the history is yet.
So now the experience of running this, I mean, obviously at the moment you've got it implemented and compiling on Linux, and what about Windows and what about Mac, the other two platforms?
I like the way you pointed at me when you said Windows. It's like, that's the guy that uses Windows.
One can jack run it, basically.
Well, as soon as he loads Ubuntu on his machine.
That's a good answer. And you could run it in a virtualized environment as well if you really wanted to. It would run. The critical part, because it's a fairly standard C program, it doesn't use anything clever at all. It should run on any POSIX-compliant operating system, and Microsoft is reasonably POSIX-compliant, Mac is reasonably POSIX-compliant. The difficult part, difficult, tricky, interesting, is the graphics handling. Now, the graphics library that I chose to use for it is the SDL, which is a simple direct media layer library. There are SDL libraries for Windows, for Mac, for iPad, iPhone, iEverything, and Android. And a few other esoteric platforms as well. So, two bonuses by picking SDL. One is it's actually easy to use. The other one is that it's relatively cross-platform. All it requires is a little bit of time for me to sit down, work out how to cross-compile it, and link in the right libraries on both Windows and Mac. And I'm hoping to do that pretty soon, weeks rather than months. So, yeah, should be there.
Cool. So you said a bit, you're talking about SDL on the graphics side.
Yeah.
Maybe you can talk a bit more about that. I mean, in my head, I'm picturing, do you have a separate window for the graphics if you're writing basic and immediate into immediate mode? Can you do that and then start poking around with the graphics on the fly sort of thing?
I played with a few ways of doing things. And initially I was thinking, yes, I could have a text terminal, an Xterm type thing where you type in, and then you type in GR or HGR, and then up pops the graphics window. And I thought, That then doesn't lend itself to whole screen operations, or where you want to get back into the situation where you switch the computer on and 5 seconds later you've got BASIC. Yeah. I think I can boot a Raspberry Pi into BASIC in 5 seconds. I've been watching people booting Raspberry Pis and I think, yeah, 5 seconds. Anyway, so I abandoned that and I went for one window, and that one window is a graphics window. It's running SDL. Side effect of that was that I actually had to design my own font. I had to write my own program to print that font onto the screen. I had to write my own program to scroll the screen. SDL is quite good, but it's very, very basic and very low level, which brings us to something we were actually chatting about before we started this, is old-fashioned computers. You used to be able to poke pixels at the screen. You'd write a byte to memory and bingo, it'd be there on the screen. You can't do that with modern computers. Mostly because the graphics processors are separate to the main processors, the graphics memory is separate to the main memory. So you have to go through a conversion layer, and SDL is very good at that. I can write to the buffer memory, and I can then give an instruction that says, copy this to the screen, and it does it in a blink, in an instant. It has downsides as well as upsides, but I've mostly worked out the downsides. The downside is that if you write a program that draws lots and lots of things, then sits in the loop doing nothing, you won't see it on the screen. You've actually got to call an update routine that then copies it from the software buffer to the screen memory before you can actually see it. This is, it's typical of modern games programming. You would draw the scene and you would then go update, and you do the update on the vertical refresh so you don't get what they call tearing on the screen. You won't see the screen flicker halfway through the update. So that's, I've built that into my system. If you print a line of text, whenever you print a new line or an end of line, it does the update for you. Whenever you scroll, it does the update for you. Whenever you do graphics, you've got to do the update, unless it stops for input. If you stop for input, then it does the update. So most of the time, if you're drawing a little bit of graphics and then you're getting some keyboard input, drawing graphics, keyboard input, you don't notice it. The only time you do notice it is if you're drawing a lot of graphics that's going to take seconds to do. You then think, why is nothing happening on the screen?
Right.
You've then got to program that update in. And I do try and explain this in the manual and give some examples. The other difference, we're talking about old and new, is that modern computers are fast.
Yeah.
And it wasn't primarily something I was thinking about was speed. But one of the... In the graphics section inside my basic, I've put Turtle graphics. Because Turtle graphics are fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very easy in Turtle graphics, 3 or 4 lines of code, and you've generated a spiral or something on the screen. So I put together a little program, and I thought, well, let's draw a spiral. And then let's rotate the spiral by drawing the entire spiral again. So you draw it in green, for example. You then draw it in black, and you change the initial angle, and then you draw it in green again. And I'm thinking, well, that's going to execute a few thousand instructions to draw a circle. And I was pleasantly surprised at how fast it was.
Sure.
I can generate a spiral. It's a simple Turtle spiral program. You know, move 1, turn 1, move 2, turn 1, move 3, turn 1, move 4. And that generates a spiral. The angle that you turn it depends on what type of spiral it generates. I wish I could demonstrate to you because it's pretty cool. And then let's animate that. Let's erase it and redraw it. Erase it and redraw it. And I'm getting between sort of 30 and 200 frames a second.
Yeah.
And this is from a basic program. Now, I wrote... One of the things that I wrote way back 30 years ago was a Turtle graphics interpreter, because in schools 30 years ago, people were doing Logo, they were using Turtle graphics, they had physical turtles that would walk along the floor and with a pen. And
oh, God, yeah, I'd forgotten all about that, yeah. They stuck on a big bit of paper and it had all like, the see-through bits on it, and it'd be like turning corners and stuff. Yeah,
how fun was that? Yeah. You know, to actually see it doing that sort of thing. And yeah, the program that I wrote in Apple Basic on the Apple II to interpret Turtle graphics would take about 30 seconds a frame. And now I'm doing 30 frames a second, and I'm thinking, it just brings a whole new angle to the whole thing. Now you can do these things. One of the things that's on my to-do list was to program Conway's Game of Life.
Yeah.
It's a classic computer program to do cellular automation. I remember seeing this on BASIC on the Apple II and latterly on the BBC Micro, which was a little bit faster, and thinking, yeah, it was taking 3 or 4 seconds per iteration. We'd put a little glider in, we'd watch the glider go click, 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 click. And I know from past experiences that I'm going to do this program in BASIC, I'm just going to watch that glider fly off the screen before I can blink.
Yeah.
And it means you can do things bigger, because you were limited to your old Apple graphics, your 40x40 low res or 280x192 high res, what we call high resolution at the time. even though the BBC Micro wasn't much higher resolution because memory was expensive and your graphics was in memory. But now we don't think of it as that. We think, well, we've got a screen memory. We've got 1028x1024. And yeah, we can do that. We can keep that in memory. We can use that in full colour in our video display, and we can animate things over that pretty fast.
Yeah, stuff that would be considered, well, ridiculous supercomputer stuff at the time. It's just like, we'd need so many gigabytes of memory to do that. Well, these days it's like, well, yeah, how many do you need?
It is. Magic back then, wouldn't it?
It's good to be nostalgic about it, but I think we also have to realise what we've got today, and we've got to use what we've got today. I don't want to write an 8-bit BASIC that runs on an 8-bit micro. I've got a 32-bit or a 64-bit micro here. I've got 4 gigabytes of RAM. Why not use it?
Absolutely.
Especially when you can produce those results that maybe when you produced them as a kid on your BBCs at school, you did some little drawing routine, but you did have to sit there and wait. That was a bit depressing, you know? It's just going to draw a black and white checkerboard on the screen, but it takes 4 seconds. Whereas now it can...
Absolutely. And again, as part of my nostalgia trip, I went on eBay and I bought myself an Apple II. So I've got a real Apple II at home with disk drives. I've got a box of discs that I have kept for the past 30 years. I don't know why, but it just seemed like a good thing to do. One of these days I thought, I'll get an Apple II and I'll run these discs, and I have. And I've booted up that Apple II. I've booted up my discs, which remarkably 30 years later are still red. And I've been able to... I've actually ran the original program that got me my transformation geometry program. I ran it up on the Apple II, and I thought, that is just so rubbish. But then I thought back to how I felt 30 years ago when I was running it, and I was demonstrating it in front of teachers and other pupils. I thought that was fantastic 30 years ago. Mm. So you've got to put things in perspective. 30 years ago, that was awesome. Today, it's a little bit old looking, you know. It's looking a little bit dated. So am I going to type the program in again? I might do, I might not. I actually typed in a couple of nights ago the 23 matches program. So I went from this 23 matches program beating me at the thing that got me, and I typed it in, and I ran the program, and I beat the computer. But then I wrote the program, so you'd expect that.
Ultimate revenge, that, isn't it?
Why not? Because I can, because it's there.
Exactly, because I am God now.
I made you.
Yeah, that's it.
So you've added all these new constructs, like the associative arrays. Is it still kind of completely compliant with all those 1980s magazine? If I picked up a magazine from the C64 shelf,
there would be one or two differences. Mostly the differences to do with how you plot graphics on the screen. But realistically, the other big thing that mine won't do is it won't do multiple statements on one line. It's one statement per line. But with that in mind, you could take one of those magazine listings and type it in with very few changes. And yes, there's a very good chance it would work.
That's really cool. Might call up my dad, see if he's still got the big stack of magazines we used to have when I was a kid.
I've forgotten. It's fleeting at the edge of my memory, but how did you do multiple statements on a line? Was it with a colon or something?
Usually it was with a colon, yeah.
I wasn't sure if I was dreaming that.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about how other people can get involved with this project. How have you got all of this licensed and that kind of stuff? Have you Creative Commons'd it? What are you doing there?
It's GPL3 at the moment, although I haven't published the source code. So my initial idea was to just GPL it, put it online and see what happens. What I'm aiming to do at the moment, which I have done as an experiment, is I've produced binary packages that run under Debian. Debian is my chosen flavour of Linux.
Yeah, baby. There you go, boys. Take that.
So the idea is that I produce. I would like to produce a package, a binary package that people just download and install. Now Debian is reasonably popular. It, Ubuntu, of course, is based on Debian. So anybody who's running Ubuntu, and I have had a few people test it on Ubuntu systems, and it's just worked basically. I did have a friend test it on a Slackware system recently, and he said, oh, the binary doesn't work because I've got 64-bit Slackware and it's a 32-bit binary. So there's a little bit of work to be done on packaging it and making it available to people. I could just put the source online, which I will do eventually, and say, compile it yourself. But again, entry level, it's a little bit high. If there's a binary package that will just work, then it will just work. I have produced an ARM version under Debian. At the moment, the Raspberry Pis are mostly running Debian, the ARM version of Debian. I've tested it inside the QEMU version using the Raspberry Pi Debian image. So I can actually run up QEMU on my workstation, I can run up the Raspberry Pi Debian image, and I can compile and run RTB inside QEMU. Right. Frame rate goes from 100 frames a second to about 17 frames a second. But as a proof of concept, it's usable.
Yeah, sure.
So, and those binaries, .deb files, I assume, are available on your website. You can just go and download that. What's the URL for that?
They will be. They're not at the moment. I've got a little bit of work to do there. The URL is my project's website. So that's projects.drogon.net. DROGON, anagram of GORDON. Projects.drogon.net.
Drogon,
we'll put that on the we'll put that on the show notes.
we'll put some links into it as well, because that sounds really cool. I have another question just about the technology as well. One of the things that that we were restricted to with our 8-bit micros was, of course, that there was no multitasking, there was no multi-threading, there was no kind of parent and child relationships with any of that kind of stuff. Is there any support inside of RTB for you being able to launch a child and take control, take advantage of the sequencer in the operating system to run more than one program at once?
You are the second person who's asked me that.
Okay.
The answer at the moment is no. I have thought about it. I mean, I again, one of my backgrounds is engineering. Another of my background is working for supercomputer companies who built, designed and built massively parallel processing supercomputers. So I've got parallel processing in my genes, as it were, in my computer genes. So I have thought about it. Maybe.
Well, I mean, in fairness, I'm not entirely sure that that it's necessary for the scope of the project, particularly when you think about learning for children and accessibility and all of the things that you can do with it. But there was a piece of me when you were talking earlier on and you were saying, well, you know, and I've actually used this for some sysadmin stuff and written some scripts in it that I can call, you know, and there was a piece of me that thought, do you know, there's got to be loads of people out there like me who are pretty familiar with BASIC and actually think to themselves, if I had access to that to just knock something up ultra quick, that would be actually quite a useful kind of rapid development tool for playing around with things. And of course, the moment you start thinking about that, then the ability to be able to fork off children and stuff like that is a useful function.
At the moment, the interpreter is not terribly re-entrant, so it doesn't lend itself at the moment to running two threads in two different sort of you know, forked threads or using lightweight threads. The interpreter itself is multi-threaded. But you don't need to know that. that's an artifact of having to handle the keyboard and using the SDL libraries, is that actually the keyboard handler runs as a separate thread inside the main process itself.
Now, you also talked about developing the ability to interact with SQLite, SQLite, and use stuff like that. I'm thinking to myself about the way many projects kind of expand, which is that there's some kind of plug-in architecture that allows you to all of a sudden develop drivers or ODB, or APIs for things like MySQL and other things like that. Any thoughts along that line about allowing it to integrate with things? I mean, one of the things that comes to mind is toolkits, like, for example, if you could manipulate GTK with it or something like that, you know, you might be a way to sort of say to children, well, do you know, if you... This is how kind of a windowing environment works, and because you can plug into GTK, you can start making GTK calls to create windows and widgets and stuff like that.
It's at the plugin level. If you were going to read the equivalent of a DLL, a .so file, I haven't thought about that at all. However, it's relatively easy to write a new command or a function.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to write a function which was open database, closed database. The mechanism for doing that, and I've worked quite hard to make it quite easy because I'm a lazy programmer. Every time I write a new function, I don't want to be hard. So I do quite a lot behind the scenes. So the things like parsing arguments that have been passed to a procedure or a function, you can have the interpreter do that for you, or you can do that directly yourself. So a simple function like, you know, the sine, cosine function, the interpreter will parse all those arguments for you. It will evaluate the expressions. That'll happen for you. All you've got to do is pop the number off the stack, do the calculation, and push the result back in the stack again. If you're doing a procedure like opening a serial port, it's similar. You can get the interpreter to parse the arguments for you. You can do the work, and then you can just pass the result back to the interpreter. So it's relatively easy to do that. And I was just chatting to somebody last night, and he said, great, but are you going to write a documentation on the internals as well as a user manual? And I'm thinking, oh yeah, okay, more documentation. But I think I'll do that. I think I'll actually document the internals, how to write a new command into it, how to plug a new function into it. It's not difficult.
I think, if your intention, with the internals documented, and if it's structured in the way that I'm sure it is, the way that you talk about, that I just know there's going to be people out there in the community who will want to just for kicks write things like database commands and other stuff, like to abstract into things and extend it in different ways. And of course, that allows the project itself, which you've done all of the work to get it to where it is. And, you know, wouldn't it be wonderful? I don't know. I'm asking you the question, I guess. Would it be wonderful for others in the community to come on board, like as many projects do, and extend that and expand it and take it forward and grow it?
Well, yes and no. There's the no part of me is saying, let's just keep it small and simple and keep it what it is. And if people really want to do programs using this, well, maybe there's other languages more suitable for it. But then again, the yes part says, why not? Because it's there. If somebody wants to write the next Doom in it, then actually, yeah, if you want to incorporate some 3D graphics or OpenGL or something like that, then it shouldn't be difficult at all to actually incorporate those type of functions.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, in closing, I think it sounds like a really, really cool project. I think the real gold in my head is the fact that it goes back to when I was a kid and I got played on a BBC Micro at school and then went home with my Commodore VIC-20. But there's a linear progression from just seeing a screen with a flashing cursor, typing in a few commands, but then understanding that it runs through the commands, and then you get a bit of program flow,
yeah.
And then you start getting creative, and go, oh, now I can do this, and there's that wonderful sort of set of stepping stones, as opposed to, like you said at the start, nowadays you go, oh, I want to learn this programming stuff, oh, I need an IDE,
yeah.
And then I need an interpreter or a compiler, and then I need to make sure I've got all the right heart, oh, how's it all going to work together? And then you have to bring up a command prompt and type in loads of commands. And
precisely, yeah.
You haven't even started yet.
That's what it could do for people, isn't absolutely. It? Yeah, so. Completely.
Well, one of the things I'm going to do, I mean, obviously I was chatting with Gordon, and that's hence the reason why I invited him on here. And I've been really inspired, actually, listening to you talk about this, because it's a lot more extensive than I thought it was. You kind of, when you chat to somebody over IRC, you kind of get an idea of what they've done. And when you said, oh, I've written basic, and you told me the time frame. There was a piece of me that sort of thought, oh, there's probably a for loop in there, and you know, it probably handles a bit of a condition for your conditionals, and it's probably fairly small. But this isn't at all. It's fully featured, and it's all together, and it's there.
There's 20,000 lines of C in there as well. I'll show you them. Every single one.
So, I mean,
let's do it.
Well, I'm going to download it and get it running under Ubuntu and have a look at it. And I'm certainly going to take a look at the teaching manual, because at the moment I'm showing my children, I'm showing Rhiann and Scratch, and we've already done a little bit of playing about with BASIC, and she's enjoying that. And it'd be great to look at the teaching manual. So I'll look at that, and if I get some feedback on it, Gordon, I'll get that back to you as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, I welcome what their the experiences. I need the feedback to keep the thing going.
Yeah, we write BASIC in BASIC.
Well, obviously, the links are going to be in the show notes. So go to our website, have a look at the links in the show notes. You'll be able to find links to Gordon's site and the packages that you can try out for yourselves. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are about going back to BASIC and that as a teaching tool. And of course, if you've got any feedback on this show or your experience with it, then write to us. It's email show@random.org. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Rick Timmis, and I'm signing off. Cheerio.
I want just a quick thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. It's been a really good show.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I'll finish by quoting Dilbert. There's no kill switch on awesome.
Thank you very much. I've been John Wordsworth.
I'm Jackson Matthews, and At Random has claimed another victim.
can't.